That would be Andy Baskin. I would be Jeff Phelps. Meredith Kane's out here running the show. We're at Browns training camp, and it's done. Practice this morning. That means sitting across from us right now, taking a break from writing his story that you can read in the News Herald as he covers the Browns for the News Herald in your fifth decade of covering the team. Oh, wait a minute. Microphone up for Mr. Jeff Shadell.
I started in 1981, so...
The 80s, 90s, aughts, 10s. Whatever, you're in your fifth decade
all right.
of covering the team.
Thanks, Jeff. That was exactly the way to get him excited for today.
If you're looking for an experienced guy who's been here, done that, and knows what happens here, this is the man.
You are the man.
Jeff,
as many hot ones as we've had here this week.
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. I just got up and walked behind the tent here and walked to the facilities that are now parked right at what used to be the base of the Bill Belichick mountain out here. Remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that. And I ran it a couple times in my youth, but that was it. Glad the hill's not there anymore.
Bill put a hill out here for training purposes. Only Bill.
But he ran it, man. He ran it in those sweats, those like garbage bags.
The saran wrap garbage bag things, yeah. Those were fun. Hey, the guys practiced and tackled live today.
Yeah. That's a story, actually.
It is nowadays.
Yeah.
The other writers give me a hard time about it because I would always ask the defensive coordinator, how can you guys get better at tackling when you don't tackle in practice?
It's a great point. I think we all we all say that on Sundays.
Yeah, right.
And what do they say?
They say, well, we thud. You know what I mean? Like, pretend to tackle. Well, then, the guy pretends to run through the tackle, right, on Sunday. And the players like it. I mean, you can't do it every day, right?
Right.
Because someone will get hurt. But I think this is good.
General overall feeling of camp, we heard, it kind of felt like they needed to raise the level of competitiveness at camp. Obviously, when you have four quarterbacks, that's inherent. But for everybody else, do you feel like the intensity is a little bit, like the desire to be better than they were last year? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I think last year was just, I think the defense thought, hey, we were great in 2023, we'll be great again in 2024. And that, of course, did not happen. And the offense was just a mess last year. And I keep saying that they tried to tailor it to Deshaun Watson, the whole program, and that just did not work. So all the players are excited to go back to what worked philosophically in 2023 when they ran the ball.
What do you think about the way the NFL is coached today, Jeff, and I mean with practices mainly, because as you mentioned, you're covering the team from 1981 on. I mean, two-a-days were a real thing.
Right.
Beating the you-know-what out of each other during practice was a real thing, and injuries seem to be maybe as prevalent then as they are now. In other words, it hasn't gotten any better, even though the workload has decreased like crazy when it comes to training
and practices.
And
I think there's been studies, Jeff, that in those times when they did two-a-days, there were fewer soft tissue injuries than there are now.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, and I understand from the player's standpoint, it'll never go back to that, but you just got tougher playing that way, two-a-days, in pads all the time, too. I remember those days out at Lakeland when Marty Schottenheim was coaching.
Just went nuts.
And they had that nutcracker drill right from the very beginning. And those are the great times because the fans were up close and there were like 3,000, 4,000.
And they're every day.
Every day. And the fans loved it. And the Browns were a good team in those days, right? So this business about all this secretive stuff and everything, I'm not buying that helps.
Well, there's no one taping practice across the street because there's no houses across
the street. Houses anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the stories that you hear after the fact of teams that were renting or buying houses across the street so they could put a camera in so they could tape all the Browns practices and never be noticed. I love how those little stories pop up.
I know, and maybe that had something to do with them not playing well all those years, but I'm not buying that one.
All right, let's talk about the quarterback situation. It's obviously the biggest story at camp. Are you counting reps? Are you writing down completions? Are you, or are you just, or is it just to me, in some ways, it just seems obvious. If Flacco's healthy, Flacco's the starter, the two young guys, we'll see what happens with Pickett.
Yeah, I would be lying if I told you I'd chart the passes. And some guys do. More power to them. I don't do that. I try to just observe who I think is playing well. And obviously Joe Flacco is the best quarterback of the three.
Is it even a race?
I don't think so.
With those three, they're two rookies. You would expect Flacco to look better.
What about the four?
We'll see when Kenny Pickett gets back. But I think the job is Flacco's to lose. Because both these guys are on one-year contracts. And maybe you do want to see what Kenny Pickett can do. But I think Flacco's looking better. And I think that Shedeur Sanders is improving. And, you know, Dillon Gabriel's a great guy, but he's 5'10 or 5'11, whatever he is. And, like, just out there today, he had a pass batted down at the line of scrimmage. And we talked to him about finding the passing lanes like Drew Brees and other shorter quarterbacks. Kyler Murray is shorter than Dillon Gabriel, as a matter of fact. But he's really got a – I think that could come with time, too. I think the important thing is, you know how coaches always say when they draft a rookie, usually it's when they draft him in the first round, we're not going to start him, we're going to let him ease his way in, and then boom, he's a starter on week one or two.
Right.
So I think the fact they have these two veterans in front of the rookies is really good for everybody.
You have a defense, Jeff, that's trying to bounce back to what it was 2 years ago, and now you've lost Jordan Hicks, and now you've lost Martin Emerson. That doesn't help any.
No, it doesn't. But I'll tell you what, Carson Schlesinger, people are going to love him right from the start.
Does he remind you of anybody?
Well, let's say another guy that got from California. He wasn't UCLA, but USC.
Clay
Matthews.
Yeah.
Because he's a smart player, and he's going to be an unselfish player. Clay Matthews would probably be in the Hall of Fame by now if he put his own statistics in front of the team's success. But like when some guys would be try to sack the quarterback, Clay would be on have the outside linebacker job, and he would set the edge, funnel the running back inside, and then Mike Johnson or Eddie Johnson would make the tackle. And so Clay doesn't get credit for that statistically, but he was integral in making the play successful.
And he was the guy who, you need me to play middle, I can go play middle.
Yeah.
You need me to play right side, left,
yeah,
wherever they put him, he played well.
And Clay was great. And, man, when you see him today, I don't know where he sleeps, but, man, that guy, he does not age.
He doesn't, does he?
And, no. I mean, he played from 1978 to 1993, and maybe 1996 because he finished with the Falcons. He was ageless, so I wish he weren't a lot. Man, and if they get that out of Carson Schlesinger, people will be very happy.
Let's talk about another rookie who's out of your area, especially when you read the News Herald every day. You know, Luke Floria. The story is unbelievable.
He is.
And I mean, is he going to make the team? I don't know, but I think there are a lot of people pulling for him. There are a lot of people rooting for him. And, you know, you see him out here. They're using him. It's not like it's not like he's off on the side and you're like, who's that guy? He's plays.
Right. And he's working as a punt returner, Andy.
Right.
Right. So you don't have these guys doing that at this point in camp, even though it's fairly early in camp. You know, OTA is okay. But when they're doing it in camp, then maybe there's a chance that he will make it as a punt returner. Because let's face it, it's not like these guys have Josh Cribbs on the team.
Right.
So, and I like it. They call him Rambo.
Yeah.
They call Luke Floria Rambo because he wears that bandana. He's a great kid. And, he's from Mentor High, went to Kent. And you have to be pretty good if you get noticed at Kent State. Sorry, Jeff. But
well, the first time I heard you Kent Staters.
Yeah.
him too.
I know, I am too. When Julian Edelman was like the first kind of comparison people were saying it earlier, like, oh, man, that's big shoes. That's big shoes.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll tell you, it would be great for him if he makes it.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
If he doesn't make the team, I will predict that he'll be on the practice squad, which is still a pretty good,
absolutely
pretty good gig, right?
Absolutely,
especially for the story that the original story that I had read about his family in the News Herald. I was just like, wow, man, that family is super talented.
Yeah. And so
his sister.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. Yeah, it's a good family.
Jeff Shadell joining us from the News Herald, along with your great work on the Browns. You cover the other teams as well. And the Guardians looking at the trade deadline tomorrow, Jeff. Emmanuel Clase being put on leave. Did that mess anything up? Who knows? Do you expect anything of significance before tomorrow at 6 o'clock?
I think that they will trade Shane Bieber if they could get something good for him. Stephen Kwan's the other name we keep hearing about. I don't know if they're going to trade Kwan. They have to get something really good for Kwan. I don't have a problem with them trading Shane Bieber if they've concluded that they're not going to be a playoff team this year. But I want to say about that investigation. Now, I don't want anything bad, of course, to happen to Clase.
Right.
Or Luis Ortiz, for that matter. But baseball better have something on these guys. Because to me, if September 1st rolls around after the, you know, they're on leave through August 31st, if September 1st comes around and they say, well, there's nothing there, he's back with you guys.
They've trashed the season.
And right. And
maybe a big trade at the deadline.
Right. Exactly right. So either way, if there's nothing there, that's obviously very important for Class A's future. But you're right. I mean, they could have traded. They could have gotten a lot if they wanted to.
Big,
they decided
big trade
they weren't
piece.
A playoff team.
Big trade piece.
They could have gotten a huge return on Class A because he is not only is a great closer, but he's under club control through 2028.
Don't you think they have to have some kind of information that they think is valid, Jeff, to have gone ahead and sent these guys home for a while during a pennant race with a team that's trying to make it? That's the thing I keep going back to.
Because right.
I have felt the same way you did. Man, if this turns out to be nothing, and then I think, but that's not what Major League Baseball usually does.
Right. And you know, I am not saying he's guilty at all.
Of anything. We don't know. They haven't shared anything.
Either guy.
Right,
yeah.
Right, either guy. But I, yes, Jeff, I mean, you don't just do it to say, hey, let's go fishing here and see what happens.
But let's flip the coin. Let's say they find nothing. What's the repercussion?
It'd be stunning.
I mean, we're a lot of angry fans here, an angry front office, should be angry ownership in Cleveland. But that's it. Like, I don't
right.
know where you're going to go.
Right.
I mean, Houston was cheating
right.
and winning,
they,
and now it was like,
and
oh,
they
well,
got, right, and they got to keep the World Series trophy.
Yeah, I mean.
The commissioner said it's a piece of metal, right, or something like that. I mean, that, so we'll see. But, and I tell you, there is something there, though. That's the end of his, could be the end of his career.
Right.
And
both of those guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And for that to happen to Class A, who, when he would be a free agent, I think he'd be 30 years old or something like that. So he still would have a lot of good years left. And, man, that dude would have been able to cash in
yeah.
on a huge payday. But we'll see. But
and his two biggest paydays with the Guardians are the next 2 years because that's when his salary jumps a little bit.
Well, especially in, right, in 26 and 27, right. He, they have
$10 million, I think?
Right, and they have two
team
club options.
Yeah.
Just going back to Kwan for a second, too. And Jeff and I have been talking about this since the beginning of the show. Like, trading Kwan, they've got to come back with some. So another team has got to come back with a major load.
Right.
Because Kwan fits the profile of what this organization has been
exactly
for years
right.
and been successful.
Right.
And so the question we said, who's driving the Kwan rumors? It's probably not the Guardians. It's either his agent or someone saying something, or other teams are trying to put pressure on the Guardians to say, well, everyone else thinks it's going to happen. But I don't see the Guardians front office folding under
no.
that. Where is it coming from?
I think a lot of trade talk in all these leagues is agent-driven. You're right, Andy.
Right.
And I do not see, like you just said, I think the Guardians would have to be overpaid to trade him. You cannot trade him for a shortstop who looks really good in Double A, right?
Right.
You do not need that trade, and you know if you get a right fielder, but then what do you do? Say you do get a right fielder who can play now, then where does that leave Chase DeLauder, right? So I don't know, unless you trade him for a, you're not going to get a starter for him. I don't know what you do for him, right? Can you get a catcher who could hit the ball consistently? Now, Bo Naylor's hitting the ball a little better than he had.
His swings look better, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think that their game plan changed when all this Class A stuff dropped?
I think it did.
Yeah.
But even with that, you have to look at, now you have to beat the teams in, you're playing, right?
Right.
But they're still, it's hard to get around the fact that they are 21 and 37 against teams with winning records. You're not going to be able to play the Rockies and the White Sox and the Orioles the rest of the season. Although that, you know, their schedule is much easier than it was when they went through that train and, you know, all those good teams in June, right?
Yeah.
But
you know, Jeff, with that stat in mind that you just said, that's why I've been reluctant to try and improve this team for this year, because I don't know if one or two guys is going to turn this into a playoff juggernaut. That's why I'd be more tempted, and I know people don't want to hear this. Hang on to what good prospects you might have that you might have to send out in a trade to rent a bat or something like that, and go get them next year.
Yeah,
you know, and take your best shot this year. Certainly, take your best shot. But man, I just can't see giving up guys that they might think are good prospects to bring in guys who might be able to help this year.
Right, and you know, I think a great statistic would be to go back and figure out how many rentals helped a team win a championship. So how many teams are
CC Sabathia, the best one ever.
Right.
That's all I can think of. That was the first name I thought.
Yeah, that's a good one. But, I mean, a lot of times, wouldn't you agree, that teams get these rentals and they give up prospects.
Right. Doesn't work.
And it doesn't work.
No, I would agree with that. Last thought. Browns 3-14. Jeff Shadell joining us last year. You know, I have always believed, okay, that was last year. A lot of things can change, and fortunes can change in a hurry. How can this team do this year?
I'll tell you what. If I didn't cover the team, I would bet on the over.
Really?
5.5 is the over-under for them on wins. I would bet the over. I see these guys could win, I'll say, 7 or 8 games.
Which is a nice improvement over 3.
What do they have to do in the first 6?
You know, even if they go 3-3 would be great.
Right.
But, even if they went 2-4.
That's tolerable, yeah.
And you know, they play well against the Bengals, right?
They do.
So we'll see what happens. The Ravens are going to win the division. I'll be surprised if they do not. But I think the Browns will be better than people think, because the defense, I think, it will be maybe not as great as 2023, but I think it will be better than last year. And I think going back to this run-first offense is going to be important. Now, of course, they need Joe Flacco. He doesn't have to be as great as he was in December of 23, but he or Kenny Pickett have to
be at least,
right. And so we'll see. But yeah, I think the Browns will surprise some people.
Thank you for letting us drag you out of the air conditioning to come join us here outside.
Hey, thanks for having me. I always love being on with you guys.
We love
Jeff Shadell, News Herald. You can read him in the News Herald. He has great coverage of the
Man
Browns
for
and
all
the
seasons.
Other teams.